This is America on the Road, winner of the International Automotive Media Conference Gold Medal Award for Radio, and now in its 24th year on the air. Thanks for being with us as we bring you the latest automotive information from around the world. And we have some pretty interesting stuff, we think, this week. America on the Road is brought to you by DrivingToday.com and the Coalition for Vehicle Choice. I'm Jack Nerad, and with me is Chris Teague. Chris, it's always great to talk to you. How you doing?
You as well, Jack. I'm doing quite well here in Maine today. How are you?
I'm doing just fine in Southern California. We're doing America on the Road across the country, as we typically do. And, you know, we're kind of locked down to some extent anyway. Not officially locked down, I guess, but you're in Maine. I'm in Southern California, and we don't get out much because there aren't many driving events going on. But we are certainly covering the auto industry, and there's a lot going on in the auto industry besides going to events and driving cars, and so that's pretty cool. What's going on family-wise with you?
Family-wise, well, the kids start school next week. It's going to be quite a different school year this year, so looking forward to a partial homeschooling and in classroom schooling situation. So I'm sure there'll be some bumps, but we will figure it out.
Yeah.
And I think that's about it. Just enjoying some nice early fall weather here. Yeah, we've been seeing temperatures in the 30s overnight and 60s in the day. So quite happy about that, to get out and do some running finally without sweating too bad.
Yeah, there you go. Well, we had just lived through a heat wave out here. At the beach, it was 85, 90 degrees, which is almost unheard of. And inland, well, in the desert, the California desert, which is maybe 90 minutes from here, it was 115. I think they've had 50 days of more than 110 degrees out in Palm Springs this year, which is kind of crazy. But, you know, this is not a weather show, but we thought we'd kind of just ground people with where we are and what we do. And, you know, certainly we report on cars. In the, in fact, in the road test segment, we're going to be talking about the 2020 Mazda CX-5. I had a signature edition. And Chris, you were in what?
The 2021. Yep, we're already on that year now. The 2021 Kia Seltos.
Ah, 2021. Well, there you go. Our special guest today is Justin Yoshizawa. He's with Mercury Insurance. We had one of his colleagues on a couple weeks ago talking about the problem and opportunity, I guess, of teen driver safety. As the father of a teen driver who's out driving right now, I am certainly very involved in that quest to make sure my teen is safe. And I have some young adult drivers, too. So we're going to be talking to him about that. He has great perspective being with Mercury Insurance and getting up close and personal with what can happen to teen drivers. So we'll talk to him about that. And before we do anything else, though, we will take a look at the news. What do you have for us news-wise there, my friend?
Well, we've spent a lot of time, at least a couple of episodes, discussing vehicle incentives as the pandemic has worn on, and now hopefully we're kind of seeing things cool off a little bit. But during that period, you know, a lot of automakers were seeing better than expected sales results, probably due in part to those incentives. But there are a few that have seen some very slow sales, and these are specific models. So IC Cars is a data analytics firm that focuses on the automotive industry. They put out some really cool studies. I've even actually worked with them in the past. But they have a study on the slowest selling vehicles during the COVID-19 pandemic. And they're finding that, no surprise here, most of them are high-end, very high-priced luxury vehicles. So it's the Land Rover, Range Rover Velar, the Maserati Levant, the Range Rover Sport, and the Land Rover Discovery. We're in the top of the slowest selling vehicles. So that on average, it took almost 200 days to sell a Discovery from a dealer lot. And that's above the average of all vehicles, which is right around 69 days. So kind of interesting to see. I mean, I guess it's no surprise since they are, you know, in the top sort of 10 or so percent of vehicle prices in terms of mainstream vehicles. But interesting to see that, you know, some are still sitting around the lot for quite a while.
Yeah. Well, and dealers, of course, want to turn their inventory, just like I think any retailer wants to do. And so the vehicle sitting around might be an opportunity for a buyer to get a bargain. You know, I've had some dealers tell me if the thing has been on the lot for longer than a month, they're really ready just to make that thing go away, even if they have to sell it as a loss, because it's taking up valuable space. in a couple of ways. One, physical space, but also space in the loans they take to finance their inventory. So that's an opportunity for folks. I guess it's an opportunity for rich folks, because I don't think many of us regular folks are going to be buying the kind of cars you were just talking about. But it's good to know. Yeah. I recently put together a story for my friends at J.D. Power, jdpower.com, about vehicles that are vanishing after the 2020 model year. These are models that are being discontinued for 2021. And I think it's kind of a telling list. For one thing, the list is spiked with cars, and there are almost no SUVs on the list. There actually is one. In kind of an alphabetical order by interest, here are a couple that are going away. The Acura RLX. Now, I bet a lot of people listening to this have trouble picturing an RLX, and they might never have seen one. What do you think?
Yeah, it's been a while since I've seen one, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I think that maybe the last time I saw one was at the launch of the Acura RLX, or at least this edition of it. It's a pretty good car, actually. And again, this is an opportunity for you. It's technically very astute. It has Acura's super handling all-wheel drive, which is pretty neat. And it also has four-wheel steer. That takes me back to when I first got in this business. There were a lot of vehicles that had four-wheel steer. That was the coming thing about 1985. and it is, I guess, coming around again, although it didn't rescue the RLX from oblivion here. We're also going to see the end of the BMW i8. What do you think about that going away?
Well, I think about and write about BMW quite a bit, and I'm surprised. I think I don't really talk or even mention that car in conversations very often. I've heard the people that have driven it have decent things to say about it. There are some quirky things, but an all-electric supercar or an all-electric exotic-looking car as the i8 is. I don't know. BMW has some other aspirations, and maybe the i8 doesn't really fit in with that, especially as few of them as they have probably sold over the years.
Yeah, I mean, BMW launched those i models early in the previous decade. Now, if 2020 is the start of the new decade, very high hopes, and they were going to be very, very high tech, use a lot of carbon fiber, make these very light. What they did was not only make them light, but extremely expensive and very difficult to build. And so the i models, the i8 and the i3, were never joined by many other i's. And it just kind of died on the vine. So that's what's going on with the BMW folks there. Another more mainstream car, and a car with kind of a proud history, is going away. It's the Buick Regal. We've seen various editions of that, and the Regal got caught in kind of international politics, really. General Motors sold Opel, which had designed and was building the Regal, to PSA Group, as General Motors had financial difficulties. And thus it became kind of an orphan within General Motors, although, I don't know how you feel about it, Chris, but I thought it was a pretty cool car.
It was. I drove, the GS, the high-performance model, yes. A couple of years ago, and really enjoyed it. It was a nice little car. And, you know, the family tradition, at least in my family, and my grandmother has had a Buick Regal for quite a long time. So it's disappointing to see them go away.
Yeah. And she probably had the performance model and was hot rodding it and doing all that. I'm sure she did. Maybe that's the reason it went away, is that dichotomy there. But those are a few that are going away. And I think we're going to go away just for a second and then come back. When we come back, we're going to be reviewing the vehicles in this week's show, the Kia Seltos, a 2021 model. We had a 2021 Chevy Suburban, I think, last week. And the Mazda CX-5, which is a 2020 nominally, but I think is very representative of the 2021 as well. So stay with us, everybody. With Chris Teague, this is Jack Nerad with you, and stay with us on America on the Road. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road with Chris Teague. Jack Nerad back with you. It is road test time on the show, a time when we reveal to you what we've driven during the past week and tell you what we think about it. And we have some Pretty cool vehicles this time around. I was driving the Mazda CX-5, their compact sport utility, crossover sport utility. And Chris, you were driving the 2021 Kia Seltos, maybe a new name for a lot of folks. Tell us about it.
Yes, I've been looking forward to driving this one for quite a while. I think a lot of people were out driving them right before the entire world shut down, and was really glad to get my hands on one. So it is a 2021 Kia Seltos. It is just a little bit smaller than the Kia Sportage. And I was testing the SX all-wheel drive model. So it was the turbo everything all-in, all-loaded model. It came with a 1.6-liter four-cylinder engine. It has 175 horsepower and a dual-clutch transmission with seven speeds. Overall, very pleased with the way it drives. The transmission is a little bit stuttering at low speeds, but once everything gets rolling, it smooths out. And that same transmission worked very perfectly in the Kia Soul and even some Hyundai vehicles that I've driven. So a little bit surprised by that, but the vehicle feels peppy with the turbocharged engine, more than enough power to get it moving. Handles well. It's a nice little ride. It does get rough over broken pavement. The tires, the larger wheels on the SX Turbo model made it a little bit rougher with less rubber on the outside. Overall, a decent looking vehicle as well, although the color that mine came in was quite shocking.
Now, what color was that, Chris?
Exactly. So it's called Starbright Yellow, and the word yellow does not do a good job at describing what this color actually is. It's kind of a mix between a chartreuse and a green, almost like the color of a fishing lure, if you can imagine that. And that's not meant to be derogatory. It's just a very, very bright color. And my test model had the optional black roof, although you can get it in pure Starbright Yellow. So you might have seen that color, Jack. It's definitely one of the more eye-popping shades that the vehicle is available in. But other than that...
Well, I was just talking with my wife the other day about this, how rare it is to see cars in color, actually. I mean, you see grays, you see whites, you see blacks, you see silvers, but you don't see much in the way of color these days. But I think in these vehicles aimed at, say, the younger crowd... like the Kia Seltos, they're perfectly willing to throw a pretty bright color on them, aren't they?
They are, and it's definitely easy to draw attention. I think I got more looks in the Seltos in that color than I did in some of the more exotic cars that I've driven around around town. In any case, the interior, we took it on a couple of hour road trip to the southern area of Maine, to the coast, and to have some lobster and dinner with some friends. And you know, it's mostly comfortable. The kids did have a little bit of trouble with legroom in the back. It's a little bit cramped in terms of back seat space if you got a full-size car seat or if you're a very tall person. So I'm 6 feet tall. Anyone above sort of that mark might find themselves in a battle with the people in the back seat for legroom. So that's one small issue. But other than that, the cargo space is excellent. It's laid out well. It's a comfortable vehicle to drive, very ergonomic. I was very comfortable the entire time. The optional, I think it's 10.2-inch, somebody's going to correct me on that if I'm wrong, but 10.2-inch infotainment screen runs both Apple CarPlay and Android Auto. I'm a huge fan of Kia's, it's UVO or UVO infotainment system. I think it's one of the better, smoother operating systems on the market today, and it works really well on the larger screen. So all in all, a very comfortable vehicle. The model I tested came in just around $30,000, which I think isn't bad for what you get in this package. Leatherette seating, heated seats, so quite a few creature comforts for that price. And overall, just a comfortable vehicle to drive. I think in the next couple of years, if they get the transmission programming right, it'll be near a perfect win. Not perfect, but near a win-win for that vehicle.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like it. And there was the little Easter egg that we always present to you in each show, where Chris tells how tall he is. He is 6 feet tall, and we got it in, so we don't have to do it in a later segment. I had a chance to drive a Seltos earlier this year, and I think, you know, for that young urban professional or that young urban just want to play around kind of person, a family with one child or maybe two small children, it's a great vehicle. I think it does a lot of things right, and looks kind of cool and is different, and I think it's worthy of note.
I agree.
And another vehicle worthy of note, I think, is the Mazda CX-5. This is the compact crossover SUV that is the darling of every car tester in the world, I think. Certainly every American car tester just loves the CX-5. I think they love it maybe because it's not quite as mundane to drive as most of the compact SUVs are. It's not like this is a super blast to drive. It's not a muscle car in any way, shape, or form. But it just has the handling and agility, just the feel of a driver's car much more than many of the compact SUVs. So we love it. I certainly love it. It has the choice of two engines. I was driving the one with the Zootier 250 horsepower turbocharged 2.5 liter four-cylinder. That makes it all the better. This is an interesting engine, too, in that when you drive it with regular gas in it, the peak horsepower drops to 227 from 250. If you drive it with premium, it gives you 250 horsepower. I don't know how that really translates in real life. But I know that there were some scandals kind of revolving around horsepower ratings and et cetera, et cetera. And I think they're being a little bit more careful with that. Not a scandal related to Mazda, as a matter of fact, but another manufacturer. Filled with active safety features. It has 17-inch alloy wheels in base form, a 40-20-40 split back seat, which is very convenient. The multimedia screen is 7 inches wide, which is nice. Not giant, but, nice. You have to get used to the Mazda system, which is a bit different than some of the other systems here. But I think the Mazda CX-5 interior is done up in a way that is almost like a luxury vehicle, a luxury brand vehicle versus a popularly priced mass market vehicle. So it has that going with it. And I think the same can be said about the exterior, really. This is a good looking vehicle all the way around. It's just a good driving experience, a nice interior and good looks.
I agree. Where the CX-5, and yes, it is a darling of my automotive tests as well. Where it wins for me is the interior, the quality, the fit and finish is great. And the driving experience is just, it's a standout in that segment. So it's something you don't get in the other models. Definitely worth a drive.
Yeah, and if you go to the up level like we had the signature level, you get stuff like heated and ventilated front seats and Napa leather and wood trim. And it's just, like I say, a nice substitute for a luxury vehicle at a somewhat lesser price than a luxury vehicle. So a lot to like about that. And so two winners this time around, the Kia Seltos for 2021, a new nameplate, but we like it. And the CX-5, renewing acquaintances with an old friend, and we like that too. So two winners this week.
I'll take it.
Yeah, it's good to have winners. And when we come back, we will be taking your listener questions, a segment we always enjoy in one way or another. So stay with us. With Chris Teague, this is Jack Nerad, and this is America on the Road. We're so glad you're with us. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road with Chris Teague. Jack Nerad back with you, and it is listener question time. Yes, we take your listener questions. We love your questions. It's easy to reach us with a question by sending an email to editor@drivingtoday.com. editor@drivingtoday.com. Of course, Driving Today is the sister website to America on the Road, and we will take your question. Chris Teague has a wealth of automotive knowledge and he just loves to answer listener questions. And I'll put this question to him, even though he doesn't have a child going to college. As a matter of fact, I do. But here's the question. I have a child going to college and want a great used vehicle. I think the emphasis on the used vehicle. What would you recommend that I buy for my teen going to college?
Well, that's a great question. I would say that even though this college school year is probably going to be very much different than the one after it and hopefully the one following it, or the one before it and the one following it, if I can get my sequence right. You may need to check to make sure that your child or your kid can actually take a car and park it on campus. If they're a freshman, sometimes there are restrictions on that. Just want to throw that out there. But in general, I would recommend a used Japanese car, so a Honda, Toyota. Those are probably going to be the best bets for long-term reliability. You don't have to go too far back in model years to find some that are relatively affordable and that are not completely destroyed with miles. Even domestic cars like the Ford Fiesta is a good choice. It's very affordable used. It's very affordable new. The Mazda 3, going back to Mazda, we talked about them a little bit earlier with quality. Even a few years back before Mazda became really popular, you can find those with a few miles on them for not a whole lot of money. And then one of my favorites is the Honda Fit. It's got a great space in the back of the hatchback. The seats fold down in some models, and they're very plentiful and very affordable in most cases.
Yeah, and I would say with the Honda Fit, you better hurry because it's one of those vehicles that is going away for 2021 model year. And I also think the Ford Fiesta, you also should hurry because you're probably limited to stock on hand for those. Those are very good choices, and I think good suggestions.
Thank you.
I can also tell you what we bought our middle daughter to go away to college in. This was for her sophomore year. You're quite right in that many times the freshmen are not allowed to have cars, and for probably very good reasons. But we bought her a used Toyota RAV4. We wanted that upright hauling ability and the ability to see down the road. And, you know, that has been a stalwart car, he says, knocking wood in the studio. You can hear me knock. So that was our choice for that. When we come back, we're going to be talking with Justin Yoshizawa of Mercury Insurance about teen driving safety. There's a little theme to the show, I guess, today is a vehicle for young people. So we'll be talking with him. And so stay with us for that. With Chris Teague, this is Jack Nerad, and you're listening to America on the Road. Well, as the father of three teenage drivers, I can attest to the fact that insurance costs for those drivers is a pretty significant expense. And what that implies is doing something about it and planning before you buy. With us is Justin Yoshizawa of Mercury Insurance. He's the expert on this. I'm just the person who is paying the freight here for a couple of teenagers. But Justin, thanks for being with us. We appreciate it. Tell us why people should really think about the insurance cost of a vehicle for their teenager before they buy that vehicle or acquire that vehicle for them.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me, Jack. I mean, when families are ready to buy a car for their teenage driver, insurance is a lot of sometimes something that people aren't thinking of right away. They're thinking about the cost of the vehicle itself, but especially for younger drivers buying their first car and getting that driving experience, insurance is something, you know, they really need to keep in mind. And, you know, insurance premiums are much higher for teenage drivers. You know, it's really based on driving experience. A lot of states will rate on age or years of driving experience. And, you know, as you know, teenage drivers just newly licensed don't have any driving experience. So what we've seen when we look at the data is that, you know, the drivers with less driving experience or younger ages have a higher frequency of accidents and a higher propensity to get in those accidents. So, you know, that's why they have a higher premium associated with them. But so we always recommend, you know, that's something that you want to evaluate. In addition to the vehicle cost, look at how much the insurance would be, you know, for those teenage drivers and on those specific vehicles that they're evaluating.
Right. And there's some vehicle attributes that'll give you some hints as to whether the car is going to be expensive to insure for your teenager or maybe a little less so. Can you talk about those a little bit?
Right. So on the vehicle side, you know, we evaluate a lot of attributes of the vehicle in order to come up with a price for that specific vehicle. So, you know, we look at the horsepower of the vehicle. We look at the actual price of the vehicle because that's going to determine how much it costs to repair if it does get in an accident. We look at the type of vehicle, the curb weight of the vehicle as well. So, and really just evaluating the loss experience of the vehicles that we have on our book to determine kind of what we're going to charge for that type of vehicle. So, yeah, I mean, they should be able to, customers should be able to get an idea of kind of how much their insurance premium is going to cost based on some of those attributes. But we always recommend, obviously, coming And actually getting a quote to get an actual price there.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like more and more people certainly are buying crossover SUVs and SUVs in general, and I think a lot of teenage drivers would prefer to have something like that. Is that an expensive vehicle to insure, kind of moderate to insure, or you know, on the less expensive side?
I think they would normally lean on kind of the less expensive to moderate side. I mean, there's definitely good options that you can find there. You know, we always kind of, when we've generated lists of kind of the safest vehicles and most affordable to insure, we always start with the IIHS top safety picks and the NHTSA five-star safety ratings, you know, develop our kind of list based on those and which of those are most affordable to insure. And we've seen that, you know, a lot of these crossover compact SUV type vehicles are on that list of being safe, but then also in the affordable section as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a change in mindset from maybe a generation or so ago when the younger driver really wanted a hot car. I mean, they wanted a car that went fast. Now, I think a lot of times, maybe less so. And in a lot of ways, that's good from the insurance cost side, isn't it?
Yeah, and it seems like kind of the behavior and the thinking of youthful drivers has kind of changed over time. I mean, you can probably speak to it a little better. You've had three teenage daughters kind of go through that phase. Mine haven't yet. Mine are probably a little more on the younger side, but they're a couple years away. But they're saying, I don't even want to drive right away, right? So I don't know. I think with this generation of Uber and Lyft and, you know, those types of transportation network companies kind of gaining popularity, I think there is probably kind of a shift in what the younger driver wants nowadays, but you know, the options are available. We didn't have a lot of these compact SUVs and crossover type vehicles. They're much more prevalent nowadays than they were in the past.
Yeah, let's dive into the list. You know, we at Driving Today and in cooperation with you at Mercury Insurance put together what I think is a very good list of vehicles that are logical for parents to consider. What are some of those vehicles?
Yeah, some of those vehicles, again, we kind of, you know, as we developed that list, we made sure that all of these vehicles were top safety picks from the IIHS and the NHTSA as well. But a couple of them that, you know, we found to be the most affordable from our experience are one is like the Kia Soul. And then also the Hyundai Santa Fe. CRV usually comes on the list as well as the Toyota RAV4. So all kind of those fit in those compact SUV crossover type vehicles that, you know, are safe, but also affordable from an insurance standpoint and a vehicle cost standpoint.
Right. They're not high horsepower vehicles. You know, most of them are tall vehicles. So visibility probably better than a subcompact sedan, for example.
Right.
Some pretty wise choices, I think.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, and we're talking about kind of the vehicle price being included in how we develop the insurance costs as well. They all land on kind of, you know, towards the lower end of that spectrum as well. And, you know, they're compact SUVs, so they provide safety for the passengers in that vehicle as well.
And I assume that whether you buy those vehicles new or used, you're also either way, you're going to find that they're less expensive to insure than a lot of other vehicles out there.
Yep, for sure. I mean, the used vehicles, if you do buy it used, it is going to be, you know, a slightly lower insurance cost there versus new. But yeah, comparatively, on a relative basis compared to other cars, that is true, that they'd be a lower cost there.
What vehicles, and you don't have to name the models necessarily, but what are some types of vehicles that would be the most expensive to insure for a teen driver?
Yeah, the most expensive are going to obviously be kind of your sports cars, high horsepower, high performance type vehicles. You know, we've seen just from our loss experience, you know, in terms of how much they cost to repair, those are going to be the ones that have the highest insurance premium. You know, the higher valued vehicles, the ones that have the higher horsepower, and then, you know, those high performance type vehicles. And I don't know how many parents want their teenage drivers driving those types of vehicles anyway.
Right. I mean, certainly teenagers have a tendency to show off. And if you have a high horsepower vehicle, you're probably going to have that tendency to show off with that vehicle. And that could have pretty tragic consequences, couldn't it?
Exactly. Yep.
Well, how can a parent go about checking out insurance costs before they purchase that car? It kind of makes sense to do that, doesn't it?
Yeah. So, I mean, they can come directly to our website, which is mercuryinsurance.com, and, you know, get as many quotes as they want and plug in the different vehicles that they're evaluating to purchase for their teenage driver. They can visit one of our 6,500 agents that we have across the country as well and talk to them and get a quote. But whatever method they choose, I mean, I think you should always go on. I think we're given general guidelines in terms of what would influence insurance costs, but we always recommend going on and getting quotes from actual carriers to understand really how much it would cost to insure that vehicle.
How about the situation where your child is, let's say, going to college and thus living in a different state than you're living in? Would that affect insurance costs? And if so, how? And, you know, how do the parents best deal with that situation?
It does, and it depends really on the carrier and how they handle that. For us, we have a type of away at school type rating. So if, you know, if they still want to be on the policy, you know, they come home maybe a couple weekends, a quarter, or, you know, 1 week in a month and do actually drive the car and they still want to be on the policy, then we do have a special away at school classification where they do get a much lower premium for that. So it's always best for customers to talk to their insurance carrier, talk to their agent about different options for when their teenage driver does go away to school.
Right. And sometimes that teenage driver will go away to school with the vehicle and then be driving in a different situation. How is that dealt with? Is there some special provision for that?
I think that that's going to, again, be dependent on the carrier there. But yeah, I mean, I think that's something they just need to make sure they talk to their insurance carrier about if they are away at school with that vehicle. And maybe they're, you know, living in the dorms and really not driving as much as they would if they're at home commuting to school or something like that, then, you know, it depends on the state. If mileage is used in rating, you can talk to them about reducing that mileage if they're not using that vehicle as much. But, you know, it's always going to depend on the carrier and the state that they're in. So we always recommend them talking to their insurance carrier or their agent about that situation.
Well, that certainly makes sense. Absolutely. Let's segue and talk a little bit about just the best cars for young drivers overall. Certainly insurance cost has something to do with it. Safety certainly has something to do with it. There's a lot of other parameters, too. What are some of those parameters that parents should look at when they're choosing a car for their young, inexperienced driver?
Yeah, I mean, I think safety and affordability are really the main ones that, you know, I would evaluate. You know, as a parent, I think that applies to most parents as well. You want to make sure that the vehicle that you have for your teenage driver is safe, right? And has a lot of the safety features that are being developed, that are being newly introduced to a lot of the models recently. I always go back to kind of, you know, the industry safety lists that, you know, the IIHS and the NHTSA provide every year, really grab their top safety ratings to get an idea of which vehicles they're rating the highest as being safest for, you know, passengers in that vehicle. So use that kind of as a starting point and then work on finding in your affordability range kind of which vehicles fit the parameters of being safe and then also what can you afford. And, you know, later model used vehicles are always one where, you know, if you don't have all the money in the world to go out and buy a new vehicle, they can help you meet that balance of affordability and safety.
Right. Do your statistics, what you see in terms of loss, what you see in terms of accidents and injuries, kind of back up the NHTSA and IIHS figures, or do you deviate from that somewhat, do you think?
I think every insurance carrier is probably going to have some slight deviations there, but in general, yes, they do. So we validate our loss experience, you know, for the country for these vehicles, and they do in general match up with kind of those top safety picks. You know, a lot of their safety picks are based not necessarily on the frequency of accident, but more so the safety features in the vehicle and how protected the driver is, right? So ours is more, you know, it includes that information as well, but is also based on our own loss experience that our policyholders are having with those vehicles. So there are, you know, for sure going to be some deviations there, but in general, they line up.
Yeah, I mean, one way to look at it, I think, is that you're not only examining the car itself and its performance, but you're also examining the drivers of those specific cars and their performance. That goes into your loss data, you know, as strongly as what the car does, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. That's a great way to put it, because I mean, really, they're only able to look at the features within the car. You know, we're evaluating in addition to the driver, and you know, that could be more of an influence in the overall loss experience than the vehicle. So when we develop insurance premiums, we're looking at, you know, the driver history, the driver experience, the makeup of, you know, the household and the vehicle itself. So that's what all that stuff goes into developing the premium that we're charging for our customers.
Right. How does reliability figure in, if at all, in terms of insurance costs? I mean, certainly parents are looking for reliable cars. I mean, who isn't really? You certainly want your car to be reliable. But is there any correlation, do you think, between reliability and inexpensive to insure?
I think that, you know, reliability also, I mean, just from a vehicle ownership standpoint, it's going to provide you more affordability over the lifetime of that vehicle, right? If you're able to keep that vehicle for longer, if it breaks down less, then just from a vehicle ownership standpoint, that will provide you more affordability. In terms of insurance cost, I think kind of it falls into the same category, right? So if you have to buy a new vehicle more often, the newer vehicle or the newer vehicle that you're buying, you're most likely going to have to pay more insurance costs on that vehicle. So if you're able to keep an older vehicle for longer, then, you know, the insurance costs will come down over the time as the vehicle gets older over time, right? We've talked about kind of the price of the vehicle and how that plays into the price that we charge from an insurance standpoint. So if the vehicle value comes down over time, that it gets more affordable over time as well on the insurance side of things.
Let's just talk about some new vehicles out there, some vehicles out there that parents could buy for their teenage drivers. And which ones do you think are really good picks for them?
So we've developed some lists, and then I think the Kia Soul is always one of the ones that lands on our list. Hyundai Santa Fe as well. The Honda CR-V, the Toyota RAV4, Hyundai Elantra, and the Hyundai Kona are all kind of vehicles that we consistently kind of see on our lists of being safe and affordable and good options for newer drivers.
Right. And they kind of have it all around. I mean, you have a lot of modern safety equipment. You have, with all of those vehicles you mentioned, I think very good reliability and good visibility out of virtually all of those cars, too. It seems like those are excellent picks.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, they're all safe for the drivers as well. They have a lot of those safety features that we're talking about that are built in newer models, or all that compact SUV and crossover type vehicles, so safer for the driver as well.
Let's talk a little bit before we go about style of the vehicles. I mean, my daughters are style conscious, among other things. It's interesting what they think is stylish and what they think is not stylish.
Right.
Because it doesn't necessarily match up with what I think. And I got to believe they're right, not me. But talk a bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think every teenage driver is going to want something, you know, that at least it has some style to it. But nowadays, I think that that's on top of a lot of vehicle manufacturers' mind, and it always has been, but I think even more so now, especially with a lot of the options that we've talked about in this crossover compact SUV category. They are more stylish than maybe some of the vehicles in days past where teenage drivers were getting and didn't want to actually drive that vehicle because it didn't have that style that they were looking for. But thankfully, nowadays, a lot of these vehicles, you can find a balance between safety, affordability, but also look stylish so that your teenage driver isn't embarrassed to drive it.
Yeah, that makes some sense. You want them to drive it, certainly, and you want them to get the benefit of having that vehicle you've paid so much for and you're insuring for them.
Right.
If you could sum up, what are some thoughts you would have overall for choosing the best vehicle for your teen driver?
overall, I mean, I think every family is going to have, is going to be different, right? Everyone is going to want something different. But in general, I think, you know, most parents are going to want safety for their teenage driver. Most parents aren't going to have unlimited money where they can buy the newest and greatest vehicle that has every single safety feature in there. So they're going to have some balance between kind of the safety and affordability of the vehicle. So like, as we've discussed, some of the late model used vehicles can probably provide that good balance there. And then the last thing we discussed was style. So most of the vehicles nowadays do have, you know, much better style. So your teenage driver, you know, will want to drive that vehicle. So you can find that balance. But we always recommend going to, you know, different carriers, mercuryinsurance.com. You can come and get a quote, plug in your risk, and plug in all the different vehicles that you're evaluating, so you can get a much better sense of not only the vehicle cost, which you will have, but the cost to insure that teenage driver and that new vehicle on your policy with us.
Great advice. Great advice. Well, Justin, thanks so much for being with us. We really do appreciate it. And, you know, thanks for all that terrific advice that I think is going to help parents across the country.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on the podcast, Jack. Thank you.
So that was our interview with Justin Yoshizawa of Mercury Insurance. Great advice. So important that our young drivers be safe. As you heard, car accidents are a leading cause of death among our young people, and we want to change that, certainly. So thanks to him for being with us. And I have to thank, as I usually do, the inimitable, the indubitable, the super wonderful co-host of the show, Chris Teague, for being with us from Maine. A mainstay on the show, and I mean that in all senses of that word. Thanks for being with us, Chris.
Thank you, Jack, for having me. I'm now blushing thoroughly, and I'll thank everybody for listening. And I'll also say that if you enjoyed what you heard, and if you like listening to our banter and somewhat valuable opinions tossed in between, go ahead and hit the subscribe button and leave us a review. It'll help us bump up the charts and be more visible to other people who may enjoy us as well.
Right. We're trying to be visible, which is difficult on radio, but we're waving our hands right now and saying, hey, hey, we're over here.
I've got a great place for radio.
Yes,
so there we
exactly.
go.
Exactly. And I would love to invite you to purchase my book if you'd like, or at least find out about it. My book is called The GR Factor, Unleashing the Undeniable Power of the Golden Rule. We practice those precepts here on the show, and thanks so much for listening to us. I think if you like the show, like what we do, you'll probably like what you learn in the book. And so look for that on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and Apple Books and everywhere books are sold, pretty much. So that's it for this week's edition of America on the Road with Chris Teague, Jack Nerad with you, and we hope you join us again right here next week for America on the Road.